I'd like to bring this hearing of the House of Representatives Education Finance Committee to order. I'm Representative Jim Dabney. I have the privilege of chairing this committee this biennium. I'd like to welcome committee members, partisan and nonpartisan staff, and members of the public to this first remote meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. This is being conducted under as a remote hearing under the newly passed House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote meetings such as this will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Thank you to them for their extraordinary efforts to bring the public into the legislative process during these times. For members, we will be doing a roll call today to track attendance and quorum. In the future, if you arrive after a roll call, please email the committee legislative assistant, Brittany Sunderland, to let committee staff know that you've arrived. Staff will then notify the chair, who will announce your arrival. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them. And for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached to the calendar event that you received from Ms. Burt and has been continuing to update. To get on the list to be recognized today, as you would in a normal face-to-face committee meeting, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Are there any questions at this time? Members of the public who wish to testify or ask questions regarding House File 4415, the DE10, the Delete Everything 10th version of the proposal, who wish to participate may email Ms. Burt with their interest in asking a question. Please include your question in the email. Ms. Burt's email is Sarah with an H, S-A-R-A-H dot Burt, B-U-R-T at house.mn. Again, that's Sarah.Burt at house.mn. You'll also find that her email address on the committee webpage. With that, will the committee legislative assistant please take the roll?
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels. Representative Daniels.
He's here, present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Detmer.
Here.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Working with Alex.
Representative Erickson.
Hold on.
I'm muted. Here I am, present.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Here.
Representative Juergens.
Here.
Representative Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative Kanesh Padin.
Here.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Jeez.
Representative Murphy. Representative Nornes. Representative Nornes.
His mic is muted.
Ms. Sunderland, he's raising his hand.
Okay, I will mark him as present. Representative Pryor.
Present.
Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
And we do have a quorum present.
Jim is speaking, but his mic is muted.
Maybe this is a good time to ask, to point out to the public and members that a little patience and grace will be appreciated by all of us, I think, today as we adjust to this process. My apologies. Members, the items in your folder are as follows. These are also posted on the public website. The agenda for today's meeting, the House research summary for the delete all everything amendment to House File 4415. The delete all amendment itself, a letter from the Literacy Action Network, a letter from Allied Education Association groups that Mr. Amoroso will be referencing during his testimony, and materials from education from Ed Allies. These items are posted on the committee webpage in an OCR compatible format. I will now hand the virtual gavel over to Representative Julie Sandsteed, who will be chairing this meeting. This informational hearing of House File 4415. Representative Sandsteed.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Welcome, everyone. And I just need to find where we are here. One moment, please. Okay. Next on the agenda, we are going to have our informational hearing of House File 4415. Members and the public, there is a delete everything amendment in this bill in your packets and posted online. The version we are looking at today is HF4415 and the DE10. We will not be moving the bill before us. It is not in our possession, and we will not be taking any formal action on this bill today. Members, are there any questions at this time? Okay, seeing none, Representative Dabney, please proceed with the introduction of the DE-10.
Thank you,
House
Madam Chair.
4415.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, our goal with this legislation is to support schools, staff, students, and family by directing a stable and predictable path amid what will be and will feel like a challenging situation currently. We're looking forward, anticipating challenges, and planning for them. I'm pleased to have bipartisan involvement in our work here in the Minnesota House. Through this work, we are asserting our role as a co-equal branch of government and the policy setting branch of government. In House File 4415, we propose holding school districts financially whole as possible as they implement distance learning so that they can in turn keep their education support professionals, bus drivers, food program, and other hourly staff whole during any school closures related to the current public health crisis. This not only supports those staff and their families, but also their communities, as many small businesses across the state feel the stress of current abrupt economic changes. We do this by allowing for a set of school finance formula adjustments to limit any revenue losses in fiscal years 20, 21, and 2022 because of school program changes as a result of COVID-19. These changes are all designed to be revenue neutral compared to the February budget forecast K-12 budget base. This assures school districts that they receive the revenues that they have budgeted for so that they can in turn pay staff salaries that those staff had budgeted for. If members wish, we can ask Mr. Strom to review the adjustment and answer questions after my initial remarks. We allow school district accounting systems to continue to categorize the state UFARS system employee salary and benefits cost as if those staff were performing their regular jobs in a regular school year. We also propose allowing schools and districts expanded flexibility in transferring funds from different accounts within their budgets. This language is permissive to allow districts to best manage their expenses with the current revenues as they see fit. Again, Mr. Strom can review these for the committee. We propose, with students involved in distance learning, assuring that this year's high school seniors on track to graduate get to do so, and that younger students move on to the next grade. This mirrors the national hold harmless approach so that students don't bear the sole responsibility for the challenges of distance learning and technology challenges. We direct the Commissioner of Education to waive the requirement for this year for the MCA and state mandated college prep testing that are in state law. We propose protecting teachers, administrators, and student teachers moving forward on establishing or renewing their license to teach to assure that they can greet students again next fall. We allow student teachers to achieve licensure even if their experience falls just a bit short of the statutory required number of days. And we provide probationary teachers credit to advancing towards continuing contract or tenure as their local school board sees fit. With that, Mr. Strom, would you be kind enough to review the formula adjustments and other fiscal dimensions of the bill?
Mr. Chair, members, I would be glad to do so. Let me turn to Article 2 of the bill summary. If you've got questions about Articles 1 and 3, Mr. Weeks is glad to address those. Article 2 of the bill summary is what I'll be quickly discussing, and please let me know if you have questions. I'll be reading from the document, so unable to see faces, so please interrupt if you've got a question, and Ms. Burt can put you on online for that. In terms of the formula adjustments, what's listed now are the series of formulas that that we think are impacted by distance learning or otherwise not having folks doing the jobs they were originally scheduled to do for the remainder of the fiscal year 20 school year. Let me briefly run through those subdivisions and tell you what those issues are. The first of those has to do with special education, in particular with the pupil transportation end of that. The revenue itself is based on the miles students are actually transported in most districts. There's a few other ways that's worked, but that's the most common way. To the extent that the buses aren't running those same miles, the district's base in the next year in fiscal 21 would be reduced. So this provision in subdivision one ensures that that base for fiscal 21 stays in place. Subdivision two is the school meals for breakfast, milk, and lunch. Those are all paid for on a current year reimbursement of the meals actually served during the year. So this is would have an impact in fiscal year 20. In order to keep the line item appropriation at the same amount, this allows MDE to start paying a state amount for each meal that's served under the summer meal program, which is what the districts have converted over to after March 16th, I believe they're all on the summer meal program for the meals they're serving. The commissioner would back into the reimbursement rate using the remainder of the appropriation for fiscal year 20 to determine the cents per district that would be compensated. Right now, that's 10.5 cents for each full and free price meal and 52.5 cents for every reduced price meal served. Subdivision three is another one for adjusting the fiscal year 21 base. This is for career and technical revenue. The formula for that program is 35% of the district's actual costs for eligible services. In order to keep those services eligible, there's some language elsewhere allowing CTE teachers to be counted as CTE teachers even if their tasks for the remainder of the year have changed somewhat. So this is a bit of a belt and suspenders for career and technical revenue. Non-public pupil transportation in subdivision four lags 2 years. So this adjusts the base for fiscal year 2022 so that that full amount of appropriation that's expected can be realized. A similar base adjustment for the inter-district desegregation and integration transportation is there. That's a fiscal 21 base. Adult basic education is a formula that has several parts, but the main part of this is based on contact hours. That's the hours staff actually spend with the adult basic education learners. This allows that contact hour rate to be adjusted so that the same total spending in ABE would occur. Subdivision seven adjusts essentially the definitions for accounting purposes of who employees are, just to make sure that the expected amounts in the school funding formulas flow through to those formulas. Literacy incentive aid in subdivision eight is clarifying that since that's based on a three-year rolling average of the test scores, the MCA scores, since there wasn't a completed set of MCA results for the spring of March 2020, that the 1920 school year results would simply be excluded from that three-year time period. The next two provisions relate to after-school programs, the community ed after-school and the school-age child care program. Those are both funded based on the costs in the program. These two provisions allow those costs to be charged as they normally would, even if these programs aren't operated in their current form for the remainder of the year. Subdivision 11 is another one of the current year funding issues. Early childhood screening revenue, which in statute is called the Developmental Screening Program, provides a reimbursement to school districts for each child that's screened. It's $75 for each three-year-old that's screened, $50 for four-year-olds, and that amount goes down as the children get older. The idea behind the progressive formula is that the earlier the screening, the better. Most districts have canceled the remaining screenings for the rest of this year. Screenings have been relatively constant over the last couple of years. So this provision would say just use the numbers of kids by age group that were screened in the previous year and the 18-19 year. Use that to compute both the fiscal year 20 and the fiscal year 21 revenue amounts for districts. Subdivision 12 is achievement and integration revenue. Well, the statute could be more clear on this. There's no authority for funds to roll forward for achievement and integration efforts that are postponed. This would allow that funding that's unspent in FY20 to carry forward so long as it's spent for those purposes in fiscal year 21. And then finally, in subdivision 13 of this section, a report's required from MDE to show what the effects of these formula changes are. That report's due in January of 2021. A couple other quick sections in there. I promise these won't take as long to describe. Section two simply addresses school districts to allow school districts to code employees as they normally would, regardless of whether their tasks have changed or not. Section three codifies the authority the governor had in his executive order related to fund transfers. This allows a series of fund transfers that can be made by school board approval in the operating funds, allowing money to move from one restricted account to another, essentially, because some costs have changed and some areas are going to need less and some areas more for purposes of fiscal year 20. Finally, two last quick sections. Section four is a cash flow adjustment issue. We have a metering schedule for school districts that requires twice monthly payments from the state to the school districts. That metering is done by a schedule set in statute and is designed to work around the amount of property taxes that are paid to school districts. There's some concern expressed that for districts with very large bond payments due in August, that if there's a delay in the amount of the property tax that's paid during the June payment from the counties to school districts, that could impact their bond payments. This would allow those few districts to petition the commissioner for an adjustment in the cash flow. It wouldn't change the revenue for the district, but it would allow cash flow to be sped up so that those bond payments could be made. And finally, Mr. Chair, the last provision is an instruction to the commissioner that the federal funds, which appear to be about $180 million to Minnesota out of the federal education stabilization account, that the portion that the commissioner and the governor design in an application process to the federal government that that portion be designed in a way that provides the funds in an equitable manner to Minnesota school districts. The majority of the funds under the federal provision appear to be distributed under the Title I formula basis, but we don't have real good direction yet on how that looks. So, Mr. Chair, very quickly, that's a summary of the provisions in Article 2 of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Members, and for those of you who are listening, Representative Murphy has joined us. And members, are there any questions for Mr. Strom at this point? Okay, we're going to proceed. It looks like we have Ms. Adrians who has some information for us, and we'll go ahead with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I just wanted to quickly mention that we don't have a formal fiscal note on this language quite yet. It's been in flux a bit, so once the language is finalized, we can put a formal request in. But we've received some information about the potential for any costs in this, and the costs would be associated with, there's a change for Pelsby, and that's on page 9, and it begins on line 26, and it goes through page 10 on line 5. So what we've heard from the agency is that there would be some IT costs to this change and some additional staff time for the increased workload. And so the estimate for those costs would be about $59,000 as a one-time cost. And then we've heard that there from MDE that there is also a potential for some change in the amount of revenue that would be distributed for literacy incentive aid. This changes on page 5, starting on line 23. And so since this is a payment that it takes the average of 3 years, without having the average, the amount for the 1 year, when that, with that taken out, there's a potential for there to be a reduced amount of revenue distributed through this. I don't think it would be a lot, but there would be a potential for there to be a bit of a reduction for fiscal years 21, 22, and 23. And at this point, that's as much as we know. We hope to get more concrete information as this moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians. Members, it appears that Representative Richards may have been missed on the roll call, and she is also in this meeting now. So I want to just acknowledge that and have that reflected in our minutes. At this time, it looks like we have some testifiers ready to go, and I think our first testifier up is Becky Hespin. Is Becky on the call?
There, now I'm unmuted, right?
Welcome to the committee. If you would please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Becky Hespin. I am an educational support professional with Osseo Area Schools, and I've been an ESP for 28 years. Currently, I am a full-time release president working with over 800 ESPs. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen unprecedented changes in how we do school. School staff have prepared and begun implementation of distance learning, and hourly employees have been on the front lines in preparing for and implementing these changes, as well as providing critical services for students. It has shown how critically hourly employees are to the lives of our students, even though we are often not recognized. We have seen hourly employees ensuring that buildings are clean and safe. ESP is working with teachers to continue to provide support through staff through virtual means to our EL, Title I, and special education students. Nutrition staff preparing and distributing meals. There's been a need for accelerated professional development for ESPs. ESPs are distributing school supplies and materials, and ESPs are providing childcare for families who have an essential worker. We've seen more teacher ESP collaboration during this time, which is creating stronger education teams, which can only have a positive impact on students. For many ESPs, this has been a race from behind. They have not had the benefit of using the technology or applications that teachers have been trained on, yet they have been more than willing to take a crash course, if you will, so that they're able to provide virtual support to students. The vast majority of schools are collaborating with ESPs and including them in the equitable delivery of distance learning. This bill would ensure that all districts use hourly employees as the resource that they are. If you recall from last year with the snow days bill, the incentive was to pay employees, yet a number of districts found a financial incentive in not paying their employees. Passing this bill would send a message to hourly employees who often do not feel respected or feel invisible that you value their contribution to student learning and will ensure that hourly employees are paid for their continued work with students. Importantly, this bill protects not just wages, but also benefits for hourly employees. An hourly employee who is not on paid status at the beginning of a month may not have insurance benefits until they are in paid status again. It has been difficult for districts to retain staff in hourly positions by not paying and recognizing the importance of hourly employees who support our students. There is the potential that employees will leave district positions, which are already difficult to fill. As we know, retaining staff is essential to ensuring quality service and support for our students. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak with you today on behalf of our ESPs.
Thank you. Members of the public, this is an open meeting. After our list of testifiers conclude, if you would like to ask a question and time remains on our agenda, please email the committee administrator, Sarah Burt, and that is sara.burt@house.mn with an email that says public testimony question in the title of your email, and she will send you the login credentials for this meeting. In your email, please state what your question or statement is, include your full name, and if you are associated with an advocacy organization. If technology prevents us from having you virtually present in our meeting room, the chair will read your comments for the public record. We will do the best that we can to have members of the public weigh in virtually at the end of plan testimony. And members, we also have Adosh Uni from the Minnesota Department of Education for technical questions you may have. We do have another list of, we have other testifiers on our list. And up next, it looks like we have Sarah Nichols, a paraprofessional from the Roseville Public School. Sarah, are you here?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and members. My name is Sarah Nichols, and I am a media technology testing assistant for ISD 623, which is the Roseville District. I've been with the district over 15 years now. My role is to support students at and technology with the library and also help with testing. Behind me is a third grade classroom, and I have repurposed it for device distribution. I've spent the last 3 weeks and oftentimes from 5 a.m. until midnight setting up devices to distribute so that all of our students have access to technology for distance learning. I'm here today to talk about how important it is for our hourly workers to continue to be paid through this public health crisis. There's a group of workers particularly vulnerable, those of us that are funded through fee-based programs. Without your support, it will become extremely difficult for school districts to keep them employed. paraprofessionals who work with our ECFE program, nutrition services workers, and community ed clerical staff are all at risk of being laid off. This is an issue of equity. Our workers are very diverse, with many of them being Black and brown, first-generation Americans. We are often part-time workers, hourly workers, living paycheck to paycheck. Being laid off, we wouldn't be left with enough to stay above water. Our hourly workers work just as hard, love our students just as much, and provide as much value and rich experiences for our kids as anyone in the district. During this time, school services are changing, but they are continuing. Right now, in our district alone, nutrition service workers are providing up to 2,000 meals per day. We're on the front lines providing childcare for essential workers, and we're supporting teachers, families, and students in distance learning, meeting with students via Zoom, interacting in Seesaw, connecting with our students just as before. Our paraprofessionals are vital for our kids' education. Maintaining paraprofessionals will support student attendance to participate in distance learning, supporting teachers to connect with families for the aim of 100% attendance rate. As we center racial equity in our work across the state, we work diligently to increase teachers of color and Indigenous teachers. We must not overlook the fact that the people who reflect this ethnic and racial experiences of our students are the paraprofessionals. These paraprofessionals offer a mirror to our students that they belong in our schools, all the way down to our little four-year-olds who see the ECFE teach para as their teacher and know that there's a place for them in the people, those paras who've already stepped up to the plate and are quickly learning the technology to continue connecting with them. Letting go of hourly workers will have a disproportionate effect on the children that need us the most, while passing this bill would ensure that these vital services continue. Our fee-based hourly employees providing the vital services could lose their jobs if the district can't pay them. It is for these workers, their families, and the students they serve that I ask you to support 4415. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for that testimony. I'm going to just slow this down for a moment again. Members, I think I gave a misspelling of Ms. Burt's name. If you are emailing in with a question, it is Sarah with an H, S-A-R-A-H, .burt@house.mn. Our next testifier is Tim Benz. Tim, if you would like to
Good
introduce
afternoon.
Yourself Madam and Chair. Welcome to the committee. Proceed.
Thank you for this opportunity and members of the committee. My name is Tim Benz and I am president of the Minnesota Independent School Forum. We are the largest statewide organization supporting the non-public schools of Minnesota since 1976. And I also have the privilege of serving as the chair of the Non-Public Education Council for the Minnesota Department of Education. On behalf of more than 450 non-public schools educating more than 65,000 students in Minnesota, we support House File 4415. As it authorizes the Education Commissioner and MDE to recalculate non-public pupil transportation aid as necessary to ensure that the full appropriation is distributed to school districts. This legislation is important as it follows the precedent set for other portions of the non-public pupil aid program, and a majority of non-public students and schools rely on this vital resource for transportation for students. Similar to our counterparts in the district and charter sectors, these last 3 weeks have been unexpected and unprecedented. Leaders and educators are developing new ways, innovative ways to deliver a quality education to students in all areas of Minnesota without a roadmap. The extended effect of this crisis brings a greater concern for a number of non-public schools, that is survival. The average size of a non-public school is 144 students and the median size is 90 students. Many of these schools are part of the fabric of their community or town. These schools stretch all of their resources to the limit, and a crisis like this magnitude puts them, their future, in great jeopardy. At times like this, families and children all over the state are greatly concerned about the uncertainty of whether they will return to their school, to their teachers, their friends, and their school community. It's critical at a time to show the state supports non-public schools as part of the education ecosystem. And just as a reminder, back in the 1970s, that is a time when they developed the non-public pupil aid program, when a number of non-public schools were nearing collapse due to the economy at that point, potentially leading to a large surge of students into their local public school system. depending on how long this emergency lasts, there may be the need to have a once-in-a-generation conversation again. Our mantra we have used throughout the initial phases of this crisis to our schools is, we hear you and we are here for you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 4415, and I am happy to answer any questions at that time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benz, for that testimony. Members, we are going to go next to testifier Holly Nitsky, and my apologies if I have mispronounced your name. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Holly Nitsky. I'm a food service worker in the Sartell School District and a member of SEIU Local 284. Last winter, our school district, like many, had an unpredictable amount of closures due to inclement weather. Unfortunately, our district chose not to pay its staff for the missed days. That resulted in over a week of lost pay for most of us. For me, that resulted in over $800 that I was short. To some people, that may not seem like a lot of money, but when you have it factored into your budget and you're counting on it to pay your bills, it hurts when it's not there. We all rely on our income. I was fortunate. For me, missing those days meant making a smaller credit card payment and cutting back on groceries. For some of my coworkers who were not so fortunate, it meant missing a car payment and making other arrangements to pay their rent and mortgages. Now with COVID-19 here and the schools being closed indefinitely, I'm scared about the future. If the school districts choose not to pay their employees, what will that look like for us? We may not be salaried employees, but we still count on our incomes to pay our mortgages, our utilities, and our heat. We work and rely on our incomes to put food on our tables for our children and our families. Since the COVID-19 shutdown, the Sartell School District has been paying us our normal wage. Some of our food service employees have been working limited hours. We currently have two teams of 9 people who alternate working every other week. We put together and hand out nutritious bagged breakfasts and lunches to students who need and look forward to those meals. The fear of contracting and spreading this virus has already caused so much stress on all of us. If we lose our income also, what will that do to us? How will we survive? That's why you must pass this bill to guarantee the school workers get paid our regular wages for the duration of this pandemic. It's the only way that tens of thousands of families like mine across the state are going to make it through. Thank you for listening to my testimony.
Thank you very much. Up next, we have Kate Schmidt, President of Dakota County United Educators. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Kate Schmidt. I'm a teacher from Rosemont Apple Valley Egan School District, currently serving as the President of Dakota County United Educators, and a proud Education Minnesota member. House File 4415 has a number of excellent proposals to support teachers, student teachers, probationary teachers, and veteran teachers alike. But before I talk about teachers, I must give a shout out to the individuals who make teaching and learning possible now more than ever. Our paraprofessionals. The work that our paraprofessionals are doing to provide childcare for essential workers, delivering food for our students, and delivering learning materials to those without technology to implement this distance learning plan is absolutely astonishing. They are the backbone of schools and distance learning in Minnesota right now. We teachers could not do our job without their support. But I'd also like to talk about the provision in this bill to extend the relicensure requirements for teachers. One of my roles as a union leader is to provide professional development opportunities for our members. Many of our trainings focus on the specific requirements for relicensure mandated by the legislature and the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. This year alone, my region has had over 700 registrations for the trainings we hold at our field office. As many of you know, cultural competency was a new requirement added for teachers renewing their licenses this year. Those teachers who renew this year had only this school year to get the necessary training. Therefore, my region offered 8 8-hour sessions in order to meet the needs of all teachers requiring this new training. We had over 400 teachers signed up for these trainings. Unfortunately, we've had to cancel all of our spring training sessions, leaving nearly 150 teachers just from my area missing out on the specific continuing education credit they need to renew their licenses this spring. All these individuals had a plan to meet the requirements this year, but their plans were interrupted by COVID-19. To help them meet these requirements, we need a 6-month extension for these individuals. The reasons why are clear to me. Who are the professional development trainers for these classes? Our teachers. Who needs to do the paperwork to approve and submit all the necessary work to renew licenses to Pelsby? Teachers. What are teachers doing right now? They're implementing distance learning developed in 8 days for thousands of Minnesota students. That is what they should be focusing on right now. They don't need to be worried about finding ways to meet relicensure requirements and completing the paperwork to renew their licenses. They need to be focusing on our children. Please extend the timelines for teacher relicensure to provide certainty for our teachers who are working under extraordinary pressure during these uncertain times. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Are there any member questions at this time? Okay, not seeing any, I'm going to move ahead to our next testifier, and that would be Gary Amoroso. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gary Amoroso. I have the honor of serving as Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. But today I'm also speaking to you on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, the Minnesota School Board Association, the Minnesota Rural Education Association, Schools for Equity in Education, Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals, the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, the Minnesota Community Education Association, the Minnesota School Nutrition Association, and the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. I'd like to share a few thoughts with you. School districts are doing everything possible to execute and comply with the governor's executive orders. Without question, our teachers, support staff, administrators, and school board members have gone beyond their traditional mission and worked tirelessly to meet the needs of our communities by providing childcare for the children of our healthcare professionals and other essential workers and serving breakfast and lunch to our students. We fully support the executive order and NBE guidance clarifying that hourly employees and programs with dedicated funding streams must be retained and paid in accordance with applicable local labor agreements. In addition, MDE guidance clarified that districts are not precluded from making budget-based layoffs for programs where dedicated funding streams don't exist. This is not a direction districts want to move in. We thank you for including Article 2 formula adjustments. These are the forecasted revenues that would otherwise fall to the state's bottom line without this legislation. Ensuring schools continue to receive these funds will help us preserve staff positions and programs as we work through the distance learning period and prepare for the 2020-2021 school year. We would also greatly appreciate the inclusion of the forecast adjustments that are necessary and routine adjustments to reflect the most recent budget forecast and pupil counts. While we understand the legislature could come back to take up other legislation at a later date, addressing that now would reduce uncertainty and confusion for our school districts as they are already engaged in the budget planning process for next year. Also, we'd like to see language clarifying that the special education coding and reporting issues addressed in the executive order and NBE guidance will have the force of law after the emergency powers have expired. We remain hopeful that the state will be able to provide some additional resources to help districts cover the amount of lost fee revenue school districts have realized in their community and food service funds. School districts are doing everything possible to execute and comply with the governor's executive orders as it relates to paying and retaining their employees. However, for these areas where fee revenue is the primary source to pay salaries, districts are finding challenges due to the lack of revenue. Lastly, we are continuing to work to understand the impact of the federal relief package, the CARES Act. We are concerned, though, that the federal funding will not address the shortfalls we know our districts are faced with, as the bulk of federal funds will be based on the previous Title I allocations. There will be wide variations in the distribution of aid among school districts, with many districts receiving very little assistance. Thank you for providing me this opportunity today.
Thank you very much. Members, are there any questions for Mr. Amoroso? Okay.
Julie, I have a question.
Juergens. Representative Juergens, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Amoroso, is there anything in this bill that would prevent terminating an employee, a teacher, a faculty member for a non-COVID-19 related cause?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I understood that you're asking if a district could terminate a teacher for cause?
Yes. Is there anything in this bill that would prevent that, even if it's not related to COVID-19 at all?
I will be honest with you, Madam Chair and committee members, I have not looked at the bill from that perspective, so I probably would not be in a position to respond to that.
Okay, thank you.
Any follow-up, Representative Juergens?
No, thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair? Good. Representative Devney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe Mr. Weeks can help with Representative Juergens' question.
All right. Mr. Weeks.
Representative Juergens. Excuse me, this is Ben Weeks from House Research. Representative Juergens, I don't read anything in here that would disallow a school district to terminate anyone for cause. And it's entirely silent on salaried workers like teachers and administrators.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Follow up?
No follow up.
Okay. Any other member questions? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go on to our next testifier. Up next, I have Matthew Shaver, a middle school science teacher from Northeast College Prep. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and begin with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Chair Dabney, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Matt Shaver, and I am a middle school science teacher at Northeast College Prep, a K-8 school in Minneapolis that serves 85% students of color. 88% of our students live in poverty, and 41% of our students are English learners. Yesterday was our first official day of distance learning. My first interaction with a student on Monday was a phone call at 7:45 a.m., and my last interaction with a student was responding to an email sent to me at 10:13 p.m. asking for help on the day's assignment. My students are trying. I am trying. But we need more help. HF 4415, as amended, has many provisions that I support, but I want to raise two issues on how the legislature can help students, and particularly our state's most underserved students. First, access to technology. My school is small, around 400 students. We were fortunate to already have a good number of Chromebooks and iPads for student classroom use. We've prioritized getting technology into the hands of each household, but did not have the resources to give every student and each family their own technology. Why is that important? It goes back to the student who emailed me late last night. As the oldest student in the family and with only one laptop to share, she let her younger siblings use the laptop first to do their work. This is a 14-year-old sacrificing her educational growth for her younger siblings simply because we don't have enough technology right now. This isn't a rare situation. And if distance learning is going to work for the rest of the school year, we will need additional funds from the state for technology. Second and finally, small urban schools like mine and rural districts have one underreported issue in common: weak buying power in comparison to larger districts around the country. And right now, Chromebooks are the toilet paper of the K-12 market. See, there's a shortage of these laptops, and it's challenging for small schools to compete with the likes of Los Angeles Public Schools, which recently bought 150,000 laptops for their students. Which order do you suppose vendors will fulfill first, Little Falls or Los Angeles? Minnesota should form a consortium of schools and districts in need of tech so that they can pool resources, increase their buying power, and expedite the process of getting technology to all Minnesota students. We know that the 17% of students in Minnesota, most of whom are low income or in rural areas, those students without access to reliable internet and technology will fall further behind wealthier students. This committee must take the lead and pass a supplemental budget dedicated to technology and increasing access to the internet. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Members, any questions? Okay. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you. My question is maybe for Matt, but maybe for some of the other administrators that might be on this, this committee today. You spoke about pooling your resources and purchasing in larger amounts to receive the best price for technology. Is there anything, is there any legislation or any barriers to that right now so that if, let's say, some of the charter schools and the private schools wanted to pool their resources with the larger public school district and get the best, you know, bang for their buck. And I understand the struggle that districts have. I'm a library media specialist and I'm in charge of all those Chromebooks, over 900 Chromebooks in my district. And it's not cheap. It's an incredible investment. And it's not just the purchase of it, but it's the maintenance and the repair and then the turnover. And so not knowing exactly how all the districts do their purchasing, is there anything right now that would prevent school districts from across the state to pool their resources to get the best they can on the purchase of their technology?
Mr. Shaver.
Madam Chair, Representative Kunesh-Podein, I think that answer is a little above my pay grade. I can just speak to like issues of scale. We have a wait list for students at our school that's 40, 50. And just the scale of us trying to compete to try and get 40 Chromebooks when we have districts ordering hundreds and thousands make it incredibly difficult. I'm not personally aware of anything that smaller schools are doing to pool those resources, which is one of the reasons that my suggestion is we get some force behind us to help make that possible.
Follow up? Okay, thank you very much. We have another question, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to jump in real quick too, and just a reminder, the guidance from MDE is about distance learning, not just about e-learning. So there's many schools that are adjusting, especially on grade level by grade level, whether or not that's going to be about technology and e-learning, or if it's going to be about distribution of paper packets and different other ways to do distance learning. So just a reminder that it doesn't necessarily always mean electronic learning.
Great, thank you. Representative Hewitt has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this goes to Ms. Schmidt from 196. First of all, thank you so much. It's always great to see 196 represented. Ms. Schmidt, do you feel that 6 months is going to be enough to move these continuing eds? We really don't know what the future holds. And to have our teachers stressed out, worried, I mean, we did this for nurses and we did it for EMTs. I'm worried that maybe we should probably look at moving that even more than 6 months. So what's your feeling on that?
Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you. Hello, Representative Hewitt. Good to see you. I think, you know, we'll take more. We'd be happy to have longer, but 6 months, I know Education Minnesota and my local union are working very hard to get some of these trainings online right now. So what's hard for me right now is my presenters are teachers. So I hate to ask them to be teaching their students and now teach their colleagues as well. But we're hoping that if we had 6 months, we'd have the summer to get this taken care of. If we're, even if we can't congregate, we should be able to get it up and running online for everyone by then. So we'll always take more, but I think 6 months is reasonable and fair.
Madam Chair, Ms. Schmidt, thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, I understand that Ms. Schmidt needs to leave this committee hearing right now. So we just thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your time and wish you the best. And thanks to all of your teachers across Minnesota and in your area for doing the great work they're doing.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Absolutely. At this time, it looks like, Representative Konish-Pudin, go ahead.
Sure. I have one more question that I'm sort of pondering, and this is for Mr. Amoroso. I'm wondering if all of the groups that you represent, do they support this bill, and do they support the provision to pay our hourly employees and keep them whole?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I'm going to speak on just my own behalf because what I was approved to speak on was what I shared with you. And so I don't want to put words in anyone else's mouth. But we, as we mentioned in the testimony, we have been following the guidance that came from the executive order and that has come through MDE. We want to see all of our employees paid. But the challenges that we are running into now is in the area of community ed and at times student nutrition. We had some earlier challenges with special education, but the state's been good to help us out in that way with letting us code people's activities, whether it's special ed related or not. So that's helped us. But we have districts that are starting to utilize their fund balances and trying to keep everybody employed. But the longer this goes, the more challenges individual school districts are going to face in terms of, do they have the resources to continue paying everyone? When you take that faucet of dollars associated with community ed and student nutrition, and you turn it off, and it's been turned off. It hasn't been siphoned down in our community ed world. It's basically been turned off. That is creating challenges for the districts. And that is why we were hopeful that as part of this DE 10, or if there's an 11 or a 12, or if there's other legislation down the road here, that the state would be able to provide us with some additional resources. We understand that the state can't do everything. And we are having our districts that are utilizing fund balances. But those fund balances only can go so far. And then we're going to reach a point where the districts aren't going to have the resources to pay people. And so we're hoping that the state, through whether it be this bill or another bill, collaboratively with the Senate and the governor, would provide additional resources that would assist the school districts. So do we want to pay our employees? Absolutely. We've said that from day one, our association. We've said that from day one. But what I'm starting to hear, and I talk to superintendents every day, some of our regions, I have region Zooms like we're doing here, and they're starting to get concerned that they aren't going to have the resources to continue doing what they want to do, which is pay all their employees. And that's why you've seen some districts, I believe, already have some layoffs. And I think if we go months down the road, that's going to become more challenging. And the last comment I'll make is that the districts aren't only concerned about what's happening this month, next month, or the next month. The financial well-being of the district is something that they also have to look at as we're contemplating, and the districts are already beginning to build the budgets for 2020, 2021. And as they're building those budgets, they're going to have to look at what type of financial situation are we in now, what's going on with the economy. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen at our legislature for the 21-23 biennium. And so those are going to be very challenging times for our districts.
Thank you, Mr. Amoroso. Follow up?
Yes, please. So I guess I understand where you're coming from, and I definitely realize that there are different budget reserves in different districts, and but I think our chair has reminded us a number of times that schools are still getting funds from the federal government. They're getting funds from our state. There are funds coming in. And as he likes to remind us, there's also cost savings that school districts are experiencing. You know, I can think of a number of, we call them educational assistants in our district and clerks that are sole providers of their families. And they also carry their health insurance. And when this pandemic starts, what will they do? Now they'll be going on to unemployment, and because of the nature of their jobs, you know, they don't receive unemployment insurance during the summer months. And so I know this complicates everything, and I'm trying to count here how many weeks of school we have left. You're talking about months and months down the road. I think the expectation is that school districts would continue to support their staff through the school year, through their contracts. And I know it is a difficult situation both for our school districts and for the state, well, for everybody around. But I would like, sometimes we have to think economically and responsibly and not always think with our hearts. But I think there are instances where we are perhaps going to be more destructive by not supporting those hourly employees down the road. We have to start back in the fall. Are they going to be able to come back with us? Will they have found something else? I would hope that we would do everything that we can to retain and support those people that have worked so hard for our students and for our school districts. I see both sides of the coin here, but I did just want to get that out there and let you know that I would ask that our school districts do the best that they can to continue to support the hourly school employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Amoroso, any comments or response?
All I would say, Madam Chair and Representative, is I can guarantee you our school districts are doing exactly what you just asked, our administration. Our people are doing what they need to do as best they can. And, you know, I started off my testimony by complimenting our teachers and all of our support staff, whether it be custodian, whether it be bus service, whether, you know, all of our workers, all of our paras, everybody is doing yeoman's work. And the reason I talked about months out was the concept that you just mentioned about what will happen for the 2021 school year. And that's where districts are also concerned about making sure that they're in a solid financial position so that they can have all of our employees working for 2021. And districts are doing their best. I can tell you, I've not had one superintendent, not one, tell me they want to lay people off. Not one. And I have calls every day and emails every day. And as I mentioned, we have region meetings. So I can guarantee you that we are going to continue to work as hard as we can to make sure that we are you know, paying our employees. But we're starting to walk towards that cliff. And that cliff is at a different spot for each school district based on their own reserves and their own financial situation. And that's why we continue to respectfully request that the state, the legislature, and the governor look at providing additional resources. We greatly appreciate the ability to have the flexibility within the various funds. We thank you for that. But that doesn't add additional resources. So we're hopefully going to have some additional resources. And by working together, by using the fund balances, maybe some additional state money, we can keep everybody employed, because that truly is our goal.
Thank you very much. Representative Joachim, do you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry about that. Mr. Amoroso, I just wanted to echo the thanks of Representative Kunesh-Badin for all the work and that school districts are doing right now to go above and beyond in this time of fluidity. And that's part of it is very fluid right now. And we have about 6-7 weeks left of school. And I know you're starting to put your budgets together now, but this is one of those times where we need to kind of take things 1 week at a time. And hoping that you're looking at the flexibility that is in this bill around moving funds around and funds that you might not need to be expending this year. Also looking and waiting to see what the schools will be getting for from the feds to help with those holes. Do you have any schools right now already through their fund balance for community ed? Many of them have been on spring break. They don't know what the childcare situation looks like yet. They don't know what that budget's going to look like for the next few weeks out. And I would kind of hope that you would be focusing on the next few weeks and trying to see what you can do and wait to see what those funds from the feds are coming to see how you can fill those holes before folks are starting to get laid off, because many of our paras don't qualify for unemployment. Maybe the question I have in there is, do you actually have a school that is through their fund balance already?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Youakim. I don't have specific data on every district in the state. I've got some anecdotal data from districts that have indicated that they have utilized a significant number of dollars already, but I don't have a specific number for each and every district. But again, we have 331 plus public schools. There are 331 plus different scenarios that are in the state right now.
Follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Amoroso, I do understand that, and I do understand what a lot of districts were already looking at cuts for next year. Mm-hmm. I would just ask and plead that you look at those fund balances. I think across our entire economy, we just don't know what it's going to look like on the way out after this. And everybody's going to be looking at ways to come back. And we all need to play our part.
Thank you for that. Are there any other members that have questions for either Representative Dabney or any of the testifiers?
I do have my hand up, Madam Chair.
I'm not seeing who that is.
Representative Kreisha, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Kreisha, go ahead.
No problem. Thank you. To the testifier, Gary, there won't be any money. We're looking at a $7 billion deficit already. That's what we've heard from MMB. It could be as high as $8 billion. We have the governor's office already assuming the worst case scenario on COVID infections. And so as I listen to this and I listen to you, it seems like we're trying to be optimistic on the school side, but yet every other decision we're making in the state right now is worst case scenario. So I'm going to walk this through to you and your associations and the school districts. We've all been talking to superintendents. And God bless them and the people in their buildings, because they're trying to do exactly the very best they can. But let's just paint out the worst case scenario, because that's what everybody has to work off. And that is that there probably won't be any money for schools, and maybe schools will be held harmless. Maybe we'll have to shift money as we did in 2008 and 2010 to get through this. Given that scenario, that it's very unlikely that whoever the next Ways and Means Chair will be after the November election, they're going to have a very difficult time, that there's no money for schools. Does this bill put our current schools in a very difficult position for planning? Because like you said, they're planning for the next school year and how many people they can retain. While we're trying to get through today's economy, there's tomorrow's future that we have to build. Just, you know what? Governor Walz in his State of the State did the same thing. We have a tough winter coming ahead of us. Be honest with us. what is the best way we can help our schools weather this really, really tough time ahead of us?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. That's above my pay grade. I wish I had all the answers, sir.
Let me just interrupt. I apologize. After Gary, now is not the time to try to be nice. And I get what you're trying, but we got to be honest here. We got to make some really tough decisions. And so you're not going to hurt anybody's feelings. I always tell my employees, the best thing you can do is tell me the worst case scenario, because bad news doesn't get better with time. Let's just lay it out there.
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. By example, AMSD, I think all of you know AMSD, they do a survey of their districts and what it looks like for the coming year. And prior to the pandemic hitting us, AMSD had done their survey asking their districts, what did it look like for your district walking into 2021? And the responses they received identified a $93 million shortfall. A $93 million shortfall in those districts that responded. Now, I can't extrapolate that out to 331 school districts, but I can tell you that we have districts throughout the state of Minnesota that have financial challenges that we're going to be going out to the public in the form of a levy election next November. What that looks like coming out of a pandemic probably isn't real positive for districts. If I'm hearing you say that as the 21-23 budget begins to be developed at the legislature and with the governor, if there aren't any additional resources at that time, I'm not sure if that's what you're saying, sir, but if there are no additional resources, if we get a freeze, by example, or we get a shift in resources or even a rescission of dollars, that would create nightmare scenarios for many, many school districts. Now that's going out a ways. What we would like to see is the districts work hard the way they're working to continue to pay all of their employees. That's what what we're focused on right now in this conversation. And I'm not sure if this legislation passed, what impact this legislation has on the governor's executive order, and then what that would do to the MDE guidance if that has to be redone. I don't know that answer yet. We'd like to continue to work hard to provide the resources to our employees and pay them. And I understand what you're saying, sir, that there are no more dollars available, but there will come a time for our school districts where there will be no more dollars available. And we're trying to avoid that.
Thank you for that. Members, I see that we have a question from the public. I think we have Alisa Stankiewicz on the line.
And I'm sorry, Madam Chair, can I just follow up on that? I still have the floor.
Representative Krisha.
Yeah, so Gary, thank you for that to the testifier. If what you just said there, and I'm trying to get this right, we have a tremendous knowledge base on this committee, and I thank the chair and the members on the other side, as well as the members on my side. We're trying to get this right, and I'm going to ask this question. If we were to delay this and let a little bit more time pass so we can all know more, does that help your members or hurt them?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Krisha. Right now, we have guidance from the State Department, and we have an executive order from the governor, which is what we've been advising our members on. If this bill passes now, we need to understand what that means for, in terms of, does that modify the guidance? And if it does, what impact that has on us? And what is this bill, what's the relationship between this bill and the executive order? which I would need to do more research on.
Representative Kreisha, briefly.
Yep, thank you, and that's fair. And I know this is a tough conversation to the testifier, and I know that you are representing a lot of people, and your reputation, your words mean a lot. So I'll leave it at that. I think you've given plenty to think about. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, the public question, she is not on the line, so I am going to go ahead and read her question. This comes from Lisa Stankiewicz. She lives in Eden Prairie and works for the Eden Prairie School District as a preschool teacher. Her statement question is, I was listening to Facebook Live hearing on House File 4415 and wanted to know how preschool teachers within the district factor in. Would they also be covered under hourly workers? We are licensed teachers who are paid hourly. We are part of the district, and while our preschool program is tuition-based, we also serve ECFE students and school readiness students. Would this bill ensure that we remain employed with our wages and benefits? And I think we have Representative Katiza Watoon ready to answer this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Lisa, thank you for that question. I know both Representative Pryor and myself are looking forward to a local conversation here via Google Chat in Eden Prairie tomorrow. So thank you for participating here today. I know we've had a lot of conversation this afternoon about to the extent we can, and you know, that's yet to be determined, but we're trying to make our schools whole, and therefore they should be making their staffs whole. It's really difficult to do in terms of community education when portions of those salaries are covered by the program fees. And as we've talked about, there are a few options for most districts. Granted, we don't have the specific data for each of the school districts, as Mr. Amoroso had mentioned earlier. But if there are community ed reserves, there are unrestricted general ed funding reserves, or general education revenue, those are some of the options that they can explore at this point in time. This is a priority for me personally. I'm the parent of two little eagles in Eden Prairie, and I'm a member of the Parental Advisory Committee. And I want to know that on behalf of the Early Childhood Division, we certainly are elevating those views to the Education Finance Committee as well. So thank you so much for the question. I'm sorry, I don't have better news at this point in time, but I'm hopeful that we could work something else out.
Thank you, Representative. We have just a few minutes left or remaining in our meeting time. Representative Davney, any closing comments?
Madam Chair, members, thank you very much. Let me start by thanking the education team here in the Minnesota House, both partisan and nonpartisan staff. I can assure members in the public that they have been working all hours on any day since this pandemic was on the horizon to help guide the development of legislation and understand the situation in school districts, the situations for staff, and the situations for communities, to anticipate how we can best respond to those as the Minnesota legislature. And I'm deeply grateful to all of those staff for all of the efforts that they have put in. Members, Minnesotans expect all of their elected officials to step up to the challenges that Minnesota families face right now as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. As I stated earlier in this hearing, our goal with this legislation is to support schools, staff, students, and families, and direct as stable and predictable a path in what is and certainly feels like a very challenging situation. We're looking forward, we're anticipating, and we're planning for them. I look forward to continuing to work on this legislation and hope to have members' support as it moves through the process. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Davney. Members, too, I just want to echo my thank yous for all the tremendous work that's been done. We are certainly experiencing something like no other time in history. And I know that we're not going to get everything perfect the first time around, but we are in a much better place because of the work all of you are doing. Chair Davney, thank you for the work on this bill. Representative Erickson and Representative Kreisha, thank you too so much for the work that you have put in on that. And with that, our business for this meeting is concluded and we are adjourned.